thank you for listening to the Unknown Strength podcast. I'm your host, Brenton, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Mac. This is episode 12 with Rafael Lovato Jr. Now, our aim on this podcast is always to provide you, the audience, with insights and wisdom from the minds of elite performers in the martial arts and strength training worlds. So our guest today, Rafael Lovato Jr., embodies that very mission. He's a true martial artist. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion and an incredibly hot prospect in MMA right now. An undefeated champion over at Legacy Fighting, a Bellator contender of the middleweight division with a title shot on the horizon. It was absolutely fantastic to hear more about his journey and how he seeks constant growth, as well as how he optimizes his life and output through effective routine. And as he says, routine is everything. And we also learn about how he nourishes his mind through self-talk, and education, and as well as his perspective on truly embracing the experience of the journey. It's going to be really exciting watching Rafael in 2018. But before we get on with this episode, we want to thank our official sponsors, don't we, Mac?
We do indeed. The MMA Fight Store, they're our sponsors. They've been great to us so far. They've got a fantastic range of combat sports equipment, both online and in-store. The three stores they've got at the moment, Elizabeth Street, Melbourne CBD. There's one in Deer Park and one in Moraga. You can visit their website, their online store, which is at www.mmafightstore.com.au. But they are offering a 10% discount to anyone in store who mentions the Unknown Strength podcast. So get on down and mention us and get a 10% discount. And also, MMA Fight Store offering for the BJJ crew listening, the new Tatami Nova MK4 Gis have just landed, so they'll be available. But what's more important about this is that the previous line of Nova Gis are on clearance sale for $99 each, which is an absolute steal. So get on down, mention the Unknown Strength podcast, get a 10% discount, and grab yourself one of those old Nova Gis for $99. So once again, thanks again for joining us on this fantastic interview with Rafael Lovato Jr. And please excuse the little bit of technical difficulties we had in the very beginning of the show, but rest assured they don't last long and the quality picks up beautifully. So please enjoy.
So a huge honor for us at the Unknown Strength podcast, as today we're hosting a very, very exciting guest. If you've been paying attention to the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships since 2007, you would probably assume that this guy has pitched a tent up there on the podium just to collect a medal every year. And if you're an MMA fan, you would definitely have this guy hot on your radar, as he's racked up 7 straight wins in the cage, only one fight going the distance, 0 losses. He's a defending Legacy Fighting champion, middleweight champion, and current Bellator promotion fighter, Rafael Lovato Jr. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Excellent.
Mate, so tell us, what's happening with you right now? Are you back in full tilt training or taking some time off after the decision win over Chris Honeycutt? What's going on with you?
Man, I was right back into training that following Monday. The fight was on Friday. I was back teaching and training on Monday. You know, I really don't stop. I'm always on the mats because, you know, I'm always teaching and I love to be on the mats with my guys. And I like to be in the gym a lot too. You know, staying in shape, working with my strength and conditioning coach. So, I mean, I've been moving and keeping myself active, but I haven't been training like intense, you know, like you do when you have a fight. So, mm-hmm. And I had a nose surgery. I actually broke my nose a week before the fight, on Thanksgiving Day of all days, and it wasn't too bad. It didn't affect me too much going into the fight. It was just tender, but I could still breathe okay. It was only slightly affected. And then fortunately I never really got hit in the fight. So, it didn't get any worse. But I had surgery on it, a week after my fight and got it fixed. But it's healing fast. So, you know, I've still been working out. And then I got a mask to wear while I do jiu-jitsu just to be, you know, on the safe side. Well, I guess that wouldn't be on the safe side. The safe side would be not to train at all. but I can't resist. And so I got a mask. And I think the mask is really the best thing of it. It just reminds everybody, to be careful with my face.
And absolutely. So what kind of, was this for a broken nose, or was this for like a corrective type surgery?
Just a broken nose. The septum and everything was fine. Really, I didn't have to get cut open or anything.
Yep.
They just put me out and stuck like some stuff in my nose and like and they just basically set it back in. They broke it back into place. That was about it. So it was only like 30 minutes. It was really smooth. And thankfully they put me out, so I didn't have to feel any pain.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, that sounds pretty intense, mate. Tell us, we're really keen to hear about your MMA career so far. I mean, we'll get into some of your achievements in jiu-jitsu later. But, tell us just in the few years you've been competing in MMA, what are some of the, your highlights, the biggest lessons you've learned? And, what's your direction for the future right now?
Yeah, well, the whole, decision to fight MMA, I mean, that was kind of always a part of my plan. My training background, I've been doing martial arts my whole life, and whenever I started learning jiu-jitsu, and studying under my father, everything was about self-defense and, understanding how to defend yourself in all the ranges of combat, and everything was about application for real life. And so I didn't start jiu-jitsu, I didn't start martial arts to have with thoughts of winning tournaments or winning titles.
Right.
It was always about just, the love of martial arts and being able to defend myself and find, your ultimate style of combat, for for who you are, as an individual. That JKD lineage that I came from under my father, was really a mixed martial arts mindset. Mm. And whenever I was starting to train jiu-jitsu, I fell in love with it. And I was a competitor at heart. Before jiu-jitsu, I was boxing amateur, as a kid, like 9 to 12 years old. And so then jiu-jitsu gave me an outlet for competition. Once we discovered that there was tournaments that I could do, I started competing, and I did my very first Pan Ams and Worlds in 1999 when I was 15, 16 years old. And then I got to see, I got to go to Brazil and see, the world championships and see all these other teenagers that were into jiu-jitsu and see that, okay, here's a path for me to follow, and go down all the belts. And eventually I wanted to become a black belt world champion. Mm. But in my mind, though, it was like I was sort of bred to be an MMA fighter, even though I was never thinking about, the UFC and being like a big time UFC champion. That stuff wasn't around when I was a kid. So, but as I saw the MMA, grow into a big sport, I knew I would do it one day. Whenever I did it early on, it was sort of just a step-by-step basis. Like in the beginning, it was like, man, is this going to be fun? Am I going to enjoy it? I don't know. but I know that I have to do it at least once.
Yep.
And when I did it once, it was a great learning experience. And everything went well, and I said, I can't just do it once. I gotta do it some more. I wanna feel like my MMA game come together. And that's when I really started to fall in love with it. And then I got to fight for the legacy title and win that and defend it. And then I was sort of at a crossroad where it was like, the legacy champ. I had the opportunity to move into a big show. Is that what I want to do, or do I want to just, say that I'm happy with that and stop? And I talked it over with my family and my coaches, and I just knew that I still hadn't really tapped into my potential hardly at all. And I knew that if I stopped then, I would still have that same feeling of what if,
yeah.
what if I did go to a big show and got to fight at a high level, you know, who knows what I could do. And so, you know, I had a good opportunity with Bellator, decided to jump on it. And I did three fights with Bellator this year, you know, two first round finishes. And then I beat one of the toughest guys in the division in Chris Honeycutt. And, you know, won every round, won a unanimous decision. And so right now I feel like I'm just now, you know, things are happening now. Things are really starting to happen now. And next year you're going to really see the best of me. And I think it's only a matter of time until I'm wearing that belt.
Fantastic. It's really interesting. So it sounds like with your martial arts journey, the approach and the mindset and philosophy that's been embedded in you is to sort of have an evolving tool set and skill set, as opposed to, you know, concluding, as you said, you know, you've always been looking for that ultimate way to win and grow as a martial artist. And I think you've mentioned before, it's like you're seeking perfection, yet knowing you'll never ever reach that point, that it's part of that journey.
Yes, exactly. And this, you know, MMA journey that I'm on now, it's really just an extension of my martial arts journey. You
yeah.
know, people, a lot of people don't know, or they forget. They don't realize that, you know, I was a martial artist before jiu-jitsu. You know, I grew up that way. And so I don't consider myself a jiu-jitsu fighter, or MMA fighter, or any sort of fighter, or any sort of sport guy either. Like I'm a martial artist,
yeah.
And these are just ways for me to grow and challenge myself as a martial artist. It's my outlet. It gives me different ways to move and express myself. And you know, I love the thrill of competition. I love to put it all on the line. And I think that's the best way to grow. And you know, for me, this, like, the MMA, you know, portion of my martial arts journey has really sparked a lot of learning, and you know, it made me feel like a white belt again, and
yeah.
and really inspired me and motivated me and made me feel young again, the way I felt whenever I was a hungry young black belt, you know, chasing those world titles. That's how I've been feeling these last few years doing MMA. It was like a new beginning. And at the same time, it also felt like destiny, like everything was coming into place. And this is what I'm meant to do with all my years of training and all my martial arts, you know, background is coming together now. And I'm finally getting to show all my skills, not just my jiu-jitsu skills.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, one thing I think that really stands out to me with you is, I guess, from the conversations I've heard and the articles I've read, you know, you really embrace that artistic nature of jiu-jitsu. And you mentioned that, you know, it's your creative outlet. But at the same time, you're also an incredible proponent of the scientific aspect of it. You know, you speak a lot about angles, pressure, space, and all of that. And at least for me, I think you've through your DVDs, you've really systemized and put a structure in place for learning jiu-jitsu and how that all integrates. And if you trawl in the jiu-jitsu forums over the last 10 years or so, if I can at least validate my opinion there, that you have some of the very best instructionals I've seen on the market. You know, for example, one thing I hear spoken about all the time in our gyms even is like the headquarters position. And, you know, my source of information from that was you. And, you know, as a jiu-jitsu practitioner, I think it's just invaluable when it comes to understanding how techniques and positions integrate, you know, having them in a system like that. So is this something you conceptualize when it comes to techniques, or is it, you know, more your techniques over time have sort of started to cluster together? You know, you've got your knee slide to X pass, side smash. You know, they're all effective techniques that work together. So is it something you sort of strategically and conceptually think about?
Yes. You know, the way that I teach and try to communicate jiu-jitsu is just a reflection of how my mind works, you know, and how I've had to put it all together myself, because I've never, you know, my whole jiu-jitsu career, I've lived here in Oklahoma, and I've been far from all the major jiu-jitsu hubs, and I, you know, did it all with my father here on our own. Anytime we learned something, we traveled, you know, at least the closest was 3.5-hour drive.
Yeah, wow.
and or we flew somewhere, you know, and or we drove. My dad didn't like to fly, and so or we drove, you know, 20 hours, 20 plus hours to California, and so, you know, everything that I learned stuck with me, you know. Anytime I traveled somewhere. And I learned some stuff, or I had someone that was there that could answer my questions. You know, everyone takes that for granted.
Yeah.
They have a black belt that teaches class, and, you know, he asks if you have any questions, and no one ever asks anything. And then the next day, you know, or they think in their mind, oh, I'll ask him tomorrow. Or, nah, you know, like he's always going to be there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
For me and my father, anytime we got around somebody, you know, there was $500 to $1,000 sacrifice already put in. You know what I mean? Or it was a day trip. You know, there was an investment made to get to that point where we could have someone that can answer our questions. And I would go there already with a notebook, you know, with all my questions already there. I would develop and write my questions over that, you know, 2 weeks or over that month, however much time passed since the last time I was around somebody that could answer my questions.
Yeah, right.
And I would write all my questions down. And then once I got around that person, boom, I'm like, hey, I got a bunch of questions for you, you know? And so everything that I ever learned stuck with me. And basically, it made things really hard because I mean, it was good in the fact that I, you know, really like absorbed the knowledge and I didn't take any of it for granted. And I wanted to learn everything. I wanted to understand everything, but then I never had a game. Yeah. I had all of these techniques, you know, from all these different sources, and it was never put together into a system. And so my own personal game jumped around so much. I didn't know what it is I wanted to do. I would learn something as, oh, that's cool. I haven't seen that before. I want to try that. I want to play with that. And then I would learn something else and I would want to play with that. And my game just jumped around so much.
Yeah.
And it hurt me in competition because I didn't know what I wanted to do and I never had a real system to follow.
And you weren't bringing your strongest tools to the table as well.
Exactly. And so it wasn't until I made the connection with Salo and Shanji Hibeto that I really kind of found the missing aspects to my jiu-jitsu. And then, you know, I really found myself and who I was as a jiu-jitsu artist. And you know, all the years of learning and teaching started to really get connected into what they taught me and developing a system, and everything really rounded out. And then I kind of had, you know, developed my own game and my own way of doing things that were a lot of what they do mixed with everything else that I had learned and done in the past before. And just my mind, you know, I've been teaching since I was 16 years old, 15 years old, helping my father here at the academy. And so, you know, I really just finally put it all together into my systems and the way that I teach my guys. And, you know, I've had a lot of practice teaching a lot of seminars, making videos, doing camps and teaching classes. And all those things are all different ways that, you know, you teach differently for each one of those.
Yep.
And you know, I've been able to, like, I feel my teaching game level up the same way you feel your own game. You know, I can feel that I'm a, you know, I can feel all the years of experience of teaching, you know, turning me into the teacher that I am today.
Yeah, of course. So what do you actually do with students who would say they don't really feel like they have a game, or they feel like their game, you know, for example, like in your experience, wasn't really gelling together and producing results? For example, I know that when I've come off from injury and taken a year off, I come back and I'm suddenly playing a very different game and then wondering and feeling lost. Okay, so what was I actually doing before, and having to review footage? And, you know, some of my techniques don't feel the same anymore. So what would you advise to a student who is, I guess, feeling lost with their game?
That valley or whatever that you're in is going to lead to the next peak, you know? That's life, right? That's life.
You know, there's
the ups and the downs, and you got to go through it. You got to study. You got to ask yourself the questions. You got to, you know, critique your game and dive a little deeper and really think about what's going on and what and who you are, you know, how you want to move, you know, or go along with the restrictions that your body's telling you. Maybe you're been so used to standing with your right leg forward, but your right knee had some trouble, and now you got to go left knee forward, and now it's time to dig deep and get in there and develop your game on the other side, you know. However it may be, you know, you just gotta stick it out and ask yourself the right questions and study and learn and just be positive about it and understand that that's going to make you better, you know. It's going to make you better, and so, you know, it's just part of the process, and you know, you have to appreciate it the same way, you know, you appreciate when things are clicking and you're like, oh man, I feel so good.
It can't
always be that way, you know. Right. if it's always that way, you're not getting tested. You're not in a room that's tough enough for you, you know. And so it's a good thing. It's always a good thing. Even coming back from injury, I feel like I've had some of the biggest jumps in my game, and just my overall perspective and appreciation, my overall happiness has been positively affected by injuries or minor setbacks. You know, they're all minor setbacks.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I mean, like you said, when you were learning jiu-jitsu, when you're in that state of being deprived from it, you really do start to appreciate the opportunities when they are presented. And when you're injured, you have this forced time off where you have to go, oh man, there was that time where I thought maybe, oh, I can't train, I shouldn't train. And then suddenly you aren't afforded that luxury anymore of choosing to train. You're suddenly rendered unable to train. You're on the side.
Yes.
So really fascinating. I really like how, you know, you explained there's like a valley in it. Teaches us to ask questions of ourselves, and it's, you know, very much, I guess, a parallel and greater metaphor of our life and the ups and downs and it actually being a bit of a journey. So I think that really leads to a good question I have to ask about. Do you think that this kind of process and journey, it obviously transfers some benefit to other domains of our lives?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, it's incredible. I mean, I see it all the time, especially as a teacher, you know, when you're trying to talk someone through, you know, or explain to them what they're going through in martial arts. I mean, then you get all these like sort of lights that go off in your head. Like sometimes it's advice that you need for yourself. You know what I mean? It's just it's amazing how much martial arts is a reflection of life and how much you can apply all the lessons, all the teachings, you know, everything that you go through, if you apply it in your life for, you know, in a general sense or with relationships or with, you know, business and work, you know, achieving financial success. Mm. I mean, everything is, it's the same, you know, like, for me, I mean, everything I know about life, I've learned through martial arts, and I always, whenever I'm in a rough phase, or, you know, you got personal things going on, or you're frustrated, or you're fighting a depression, or whatever. I mean, I always kind of look for martial arts for the answer, you know, not just as the outlet to help me meditate and help me, you know, have that release, but also for the lessons, you know. It's like, okay, you know, whether it's to stay positive or, you know, correcting your self-talk, the way you have to stay consistent, you know, I mean, everything about it. You know, I think that if you, you know, if it's done right, if you have a good sensei and that teaches you the values, not just the technique and makes you tough, but also the values.
Yep.
I think that by the time a good sensei takes a white belt student to black belt, there is not a thing in life that that black belt can't go through and make it out on the positive end, you know, because they've already been through it all.
And that's,
you know,
exactly. I mean, something
on the mats.
Yeah, exactly. And something that's so vital to the growth and to as a catalyst for growth in jiu-jitsu is failure. I find a lot of people, you know, when those first couple of weeks are such a significant determinant of, I guess, their growth when it comes to something like jiu-jitsu, because, you know, when you first start doing jiu-jitsu, you get absolutely smashed, you get humbled. It's a difficult ride. You know, you're constantly on the bottom, and you have to really, I guess, swallow your pride and learn humility to keep growing and keep asking those questions of yourself.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, ego is always all our worst enemies. You know, overcoming your ego and just not quitting. You know what I mean? I mean, if you can do jiu-jitsu for 10 plus years and get a black belt, I mean, you didn't quit. You know, when all the 10 years, so many different things can happen in your life. You know, you go through so much inside of jiu-jitsu and on the mats and off the mats, but you never quit. And so, you know, that's why I say, like, to me, if you can hit black belt, you can do anything. And by that time, not only have you learned jiu-jitsu, but you have learned so much about yourself through the process of getting to that level. You know, for me, you know, once a student, like, they're not going to get to purple belt without doing that self-examination and overcoming some sort of individual weakness, you know, whether they can, you know, whether they're fighting to get out of their comfort zone, or maybe there's a part of them that breaks in certain moments, or, you know, they kind of give up on themselves, or they had to go through an injury. You know, I think that really happens in the time between blue and purple belt, you know, and then it dives even deeper, you know, obviously when you get to black, but there's some sort of big breakthrough that happens between blue and purple, without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Something you touched on as well was the inner monologue. I mean, that's truly something, right, that makes or breaks us when it comes to performance in a competition environment. So is there anything you've picked up over the years, you know, crucial lessons or wisdom that have had, like, such a notable effect on your own mindset and performance, like something where maybe you picked up a book, one phrase has stood out, and you've been able to take that, embed it in your life, and really transform your outlook?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say the book that has had the biggest impact on my life is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Yep.
That's definitely my all-time favorite, and that's sort of the one that, I mean, no matter what self-help or, you know, sort of success book that you read, it's going to have principles from Think and Grow Rich. Think and Grow Rich is kind of like the Bible, I guess, of all of that. So there's tons of good stuff in there. And, you know, a lot of it, like, the first time I read it was right around the end of 2007, early 2008. And I had already become a world champion.
Yeah, right.
And as I was reading it, I could realize some of the things that I was doing right. But then I also realized a lot of the mistakes that I was making as well. And it just put it into perspective. Some of the things that I was doing right without knowing about it, I was able to tap into those and make my, you know, make what I was doing even better. And then the things that I was doing wrong, I could kind of fix. But definitely the self-talk is everything.
Yeah.
I mean, the way you view yourself, you know, one phrase in that book that always stuck out to me is, you know, your biggest weakness is your own self-confidence. You know, if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't, you know, but we all think we can, or we all, want to think we can,
yeah.
But do you really believe it? And it's the way that you talk to yourself, the way that you keep moving forward despite the minor setbacks, and just stay positive. You know, you're in control of that. You're in control of your attitude, which controls your effort, which controls your belief, which controls your performance. You know, it, like, those are things that you are in control of. And so, you know, I just, over the years, competing and applying certain techniques, and then adjusting and doing them better, and figuring out exactly what helped me perform to my best. You know, that's a process in itself. Like, people talk about, you know, like, getting better to have better performance, you know, which is technically, mentally, and physically, right?
Yep.
Like, you improve your technique, you improve your physical state, your conditioning, your strength, your athletic performance, and then you improve your mental performance. But all of those three are going to be intertwined between your routine.
Yep.
What is your routine? For me, routine is everything. And the way that I have my routine dialed in, it was years in the making, you know, like, dialing in my routine. How do I eat? How do I sleep? What do I say to myself? What do I feed my mind? How I train? What am I saying to myself when the training's over? How do I rest? How do I recover? How do I hit the gym and move and all that stuff? You know, the mental game is a part of my routine. You know, and it's something that you do every day. What you feed your mind, what you say to yourself, the things that I, you know, write down and read over and over to myself. It's all part of my routine, and so, you know, when people are putting together their or they're thinking of a performance, or a competition, or a moment that they want to perform, it goes into your routine. You know, what is your routine leading up to that? And you got to be constantly tweaking it and making your routine better and better and better. And that's where the mental stuff comes in, because you can't just show up the day of and then start saying to yourself, I'm going to win this, you know, on the day of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's gotta be embedded into your routine, and you know, it's gotta be happening on a daily basis. So when you get there, you've already seen it, you've already lived it. And now it's just, you know, like, you know, you just do it, but you've already, you already know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And,
so basically what you're saying is you are what you repeatedly do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly.
So I guess what you're also touching on there with your routine is discipline. So is that, obviously that's got to be a core element to having a routine, you know, ensuring that you've got all these structures in place, all the different components of your life that are conducive to success, making sure they're ticking over and putting time in. So is there, I guess, do you have any sort of tips or suggestions or any kind of strategies around how you actually achieve this?
You always feel better once you do it.
And yeah, that's often great. For me, when you comes to comms, I'm hating the moment waiting up until it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the battle. That's what we all have to go through. I was very fortunate to have, you know, the hardest working man I've ever met as my father.
Yeah.
You know, he taught me early on about discipline and hard work and being – like, it being okay to follow a different path, but as long as you work hard for it, you know, you can make anything happen. Like, whatever your dream is, whatever your goal is, doesn't matter. Doesn't have to be like everybody else, you know, do you, but you're going to have to work your ass off to get it. And, you know, he showed me that, not just, you know, he didn't just tell me that, but he showed me that through his work. And so all I ever did was just follow my father's example, and that work ethic and discipline just kind of came with the territory. And I'm very thankful that I had that example. But you know, of course we always have days where we just, you know, don't want to do it. And that's why it's important to have the routine, because, yeah, you know, you just, there's no, there's no question. You're used to getting up at the same time every day. You follow the same pattern, and it's just habit.
Yeah.
You also got to be smart. You know, I used to think that every day had to be, you know, kill myself.
Yeah.
Otherwise I wasn't being successful. It wasn't a successful day. And then over the years, you know, I've understood that, you know, getting up and going for a walk and breathing and moving and stretching and just sort of being in my thoughts and maybe focusing on the mental, and just while I'm walking, I'm visualizing and I'm saying those positive things to myself over and over and over again. And at the same time, I'm getting a nice recovery walk, and I'm my body's going to feel better after than what it did if I just stayed in bed and didn't move and didn't do anything. You know, you like, that is productive. That is good. You know, I don't kill myself every day. You know, I juggle so many different things. I have numerous businesses, you know, my school, my products, my, you know, seminars and associations and all these things that I'm juggling. You know, I can't, you know, I live the life of an athlete, but, you know, I'm being smart. You know, I have to juggle all these things. So I have to format my energy and the way that I can train at my best and also do all these other things at my best. You know, but it all comes down to routine, and you know, being a successful athlete doesn't mean you're kicking your ass for 6 hours a day, you know, but you have that dialed in routine from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. You're super productive and you're getting everything done, you know, between the physical conditioning, the technical work, you know, the recovery, the meals, the business, you know, work that you have to do, the errands. I mean, it's all plugged into my routine. Your schedule is everything.
Absolutely. So when you refer to killing yourself, was this an insight that was unveiled through, you know, you burning out and running yourself to the ground and realizing that it's not necessarily translating to an improved performance?
Yes, I've kind of gone through that in two different moments. You know, I had a period when in my later 20s that really led me to my conditioning coach that I have now, my strength and conditioning coach that I have now.
Yep.
Where I was tearing myself up way too much. I was having a lot of neck issues, shoulder issues, and just different things that the type of training that I was doing, especially like on the physical conditioning side of things, was like way too intense. So then when I got onto the mat, my body was broken down and I was really risking injury.
Yeah, right.
And so I started that led me to this coach, and he took me down a different path, really taught me how to take things back to the basics with the strength and conditioning and just moving, you know, putting real food in my body, plugging in those recovery sessions, and just understanding my body, you know, like he was life changing for me. He is one of my greatest teachers, just right up there along with my martial arts teachers. You know, he's had that sort of impact on my life as a teacher. He's also one of my jiu-jitsu students. His name's Luke Tyree. His motto is green strength, and it's just like natural, you know, mobility, just movement, the movement of the primal man. The primal man, you know, and being able to move. It doesn't mean like I don't lift weights. I don't lift weights.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I do is very functional, and people would be surprised how little I actually do. But it's the perfect amount to give me the strength that I need, the conditioning that I need, and still be able to train and recover. And it's perfect. And so he was life changing for me. But then I had another moment where I learned that I was overdoing it. I was a victim of my own routine, of my own mindset, of season. Like I thought every year I had to be a world champion, and if I wasn't it wasn't a success and I had to try again and da 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 da.
Quite an impossible standard to hold yourself to, really.
Yes, and basically it led to some subpar performances, and ultimately it led to me over competing.
Yeah.
And overdoing it, which led to an injury.
Yeah.
And that's when I tore my pec tendon at the end of 2014. And that was an 8 to 9 month process of coming back to competition. You know, I was out for like 6 months, and you know, it was a very rough time.
Yeah.
But that didn't have anything to do necessarily with training. That was mostly to do with me abusing my ability to compete,
right,
and thinking that I had to do everything. And if I didn't do everything and win everything, I had to try again. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that wasn't a success. I had to keep trying. And I was a victim to my own mindset and letting numbers and titles control me instead of the pure love of competing and the gratitude and being able to appreciate my body. I was just abusing it. And so coming back from that, I had a whole another perspective. I learned so much in that process, and I'm still riding that wave to this day of my comeback that I made in 2015. You know, these last two and a half years, I've been having some of the best performances of my life.
I agree.
And you know, I'm you know, 30, 34 and a half, you know, I'm getting older, but I still feel like I'm getting way better. And I'm just really just now hitting my prime. And that was a combination of the way that I train and also the mindset, getting that last bit of mindset switch where I wasn't a slave to the tournaments anymore. Mm. I haven't done the world since, you know, I haven't done the worlds. I don't compete for titles anymore. I compete for the pure love of it.
Yeah.
And the challenge. And you know, I don't feel like I have anything left to prove. I've made my mark, and now I just want to do what I'm most motivated for.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's something that's been relatively echoed through some of our other guests, where they've said that when you become so fixated on a result and a goal, a world championship, even when you do achieve it, you've just, everything about your life has been on that trajectory and honing in on that result, that there can often be an empty feeling at the end of that when you've achieved it and everything has been so heavily invested into it.
Yeah, 100%. For everyone out there, especially in the jiu-jitsu world, you know, I was there as a kid. All I thought about, black belt world champion, black belt world champion, black belt world champion. And then you get it and you're like, okay, well,
yeah, what's next?
I guess I want to win it again, you know, or whatever. Like, at some point, it's going to have to become deeper than that.
Yeah.
And so the sooner that you can find yourself and understand how you want to be remembered, what you want to say, what you stand for, you know, your values, your family, where you're from, you know, that's what you have to be in search of more than anything else, not just the title, but, you know, what you represent, what you stand for.
Absolutely. That's outstanding. I mean, as you sort of touched on, it's jiu-jitsu really does become a way of life, and martial arts in general. I mean, you're a true martial artist from the sound of it, you know, really embodying those principles and values. And you know, it's got to be a greater quest than simply showing up and being able to beat people on the mat.
100%. In the end, you know, like, those people will fail eventually, or they're either going to grow, or, you know, you're going to fail. And so it's got to be something deeper than that, 100%.
So as you take your unbeaten streak into bigger organizations against tougher opposition, do you feel like age is a factor for you? I mean, you mentioned you're 34 and a half, do you think perhaps it's more about the mileage you've put your body through and how much stress? I mean, you mentioned you've only had one serious surgery, and I don't know about other injuries beyond that, but it appears you've successfully mitigated a lot of serious trauma and carrying a lot less injuries. I mean, you've been quite a prevalent force in most competitions for the last 10, 12 years.
Yeah, man, I feel great. I definitely don't see myself. I mean, I can't, like I said, I can't do that whole big season. You know, I've had years where I did more tournaments than there was months. You know what I mean? Like 12 plus events, 12 to 15 events in a year, racking up, you know, 50, 60 matches in a year. And, you know, I can't do that anymore. You know, I gotta be smart. But super fights are great. MMA fights, I mean, believe it or not, in so many ways, MMA fight is easier than a jiu-jitsu tournament, because most of the tournaments I do, I'm there for hours and I'm fighting maybe on two days, you know, yeah. And waking up the next day, having to get back up again. Like, in a lot of ways, I feel like there's more of a threat for injury in jiu-jitsu tournament than even an MMA fight. I mean, obviously in an MMA fight, you're going to get hit. There's going to be impact, but hopefully your bones and your joints make it out okay.
Yeah.
In jiu-jitsu, man, you go up and down, up and down, up and down, match by match, cold, hot, cold, cold, hot, cold, hot. You're going to tear something, you know?
I mean, the total time under tension is pretty high there, right? I mean, if you're winning every match, you could be, you know, spending 2 hours on the mats for the day.
Oh, yeah. Easily. I had 7 matches at the Masters Worlds, and after that, I was, like, hurting more than after one of my MMA fights, you know what I mean? So it's all hard, you know, but you just got to be smart. I feel like I said, my routine is so dialed in. The way I treat my body, the way I recover, the things that I'm doing now are definitely promoting longevity. And the style of jiu-jitsu I have, I feel like I can compete at the high level for a long time, because it's not based on flexibility or being able to be fast or super strong or whatever. It's a very systematic, slow, methodical approach that you can do forever. And so I feel like my jiu-jitsu allows me to be competitive with the young guys still to this day and for more years to come. And in MMA, I actually feel like age is a lot less of a factor, because you know, jiu-jitsu is a young sport.
Yep.
You know, the kids can compete, you know, over the span of 2 days all day long. You know, they don't get tired, they don't feel the soreness the same way. And you know, it's different. I feel like in MMA, I mean, you see it, how many great fighters there are that are hitting 40 or even 40 plus.
Yep.
You know, and so far so good. I mean, I haven't really been in that crazy war of an MMA fight that really puts the miles on you.
Yep.
And so as long as I keep fighting well and not taking too much damage, I believe I can, you know, my plan now is to stay active in the cage until I'm around 38 or so, you know, a good 3 to 4 more years, and, you know, try to make some history and do some big things in there. And at the same time, I'm going to always have the gi on. I'm always going to be testing myself in super fights with some of the kids out there coming up. And then when I get too old for any of that, I'll just be fighting in the Masters divisions until I can't walk anymore.
So. I love it.
That's fantastic, mate. So we understand we need to be respectful of your time commitments this evening. We've only got a couple questions left for you, mate. Firstly, we feel like it's a fairly safe assumption that you're next in line for the Bellator middleweight championship. Would that be somewhat correct?
Somewhat. I mean, it's hard to say where I fall in that line. I think there are a couple other guys that are ahead of me. John Salter has put together like 5 or 6 straight wins. You know, I have 3. So he's up there. He's been in the organization longer. I mean, he still hasn't gotten his shot yet. And then with Musasi making the move, you know, Musasi's only had 1 fight in Bellator, but he's Musasi. So
yeah, he's a killer.
Yeah. So I think I'm right there. And honestly, I wouldn't mind 1 or 2 more fights just to keep getting better. But I would like to be fighting for that belt, if not at the end of 2018 or right away, early 2019. That's my goal. That's my mission right now. And I fully believe that I will be fighting for that belt one day, and that it's going to be mine. And that is, you know, that's my next major thing that I want. And besides for that, you know, 2019 ADCC, I'm going to go back one more time, and that's another thing that, that I really, really want.
Oh, yeah.
But otherwise, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm just going to keep working my way up that, that Bellator division and keep doing what I'm doing.
Excellent. So recently you did the 2017 ADCC, which was a lot of ups and downs of that tournament. I mean, you went to the semifinals beating Elliot Kelly, I think 7-0, then Muhammad Ali 3-0. Looked like you had the choke a few times, or at least you were going to crack his jaw with enough pressure. But then you actually lost to Felipe Pena, who won, you know, the absolute and the weight division. Now, from my view, I mean, I watched that a couple of times. I don't know how you feel about this, but I was quite shocked at the result. I mean, you know, I think you spent the vast majority of the time on top, applying pressure, working smash entries, and the like, and in generally just far more aggressive. And looking like a lot of your MMA has carried over with that, you know, that aggression you're bringing. So honestly, overall, I'm quite surprised you didn't take that decision. And at least your post-fight body language was a pretty stark distinction. I mean, at least I saw one fighter there looking like he'd lost, and one was celebrating, and then the other's hand got raised.
Yeah, you know, well, quick correction. You said Pena won the division. He actually lost final to Yuri,
yeah.
But he did win the absolute. And I definitely did feel like I won that match, you know. But I didn't score. You know, I didn't score. I feel like I was closer to scoring than what he was. Mm. But, you know, I thought there was a moment where he pulled guard, too, and he didn't get a negative. But, I mean, it is what it is. Those things happen at ADCC all the time. It's happened to me before there. You know, Pena is an incredible competitor, incredible jiu-jitsu. I'm a fan of his. And he got his arm raised. You know, that's how it goes. I would have loved to have been in that final. I truly believed that was my year. I felt so good, and I felt like I was competing, you know, showing some of my best stuff. And so I thought that, you know, this is my best. This is my year, you know, I'm going to do it. But in the end, you know, it didn't work out. And then I lost the third place match by decision two that at the time, you know, it is what it is. It's not clear what they're looking for.
Yeah.
For a decision, you know, are they looking at the overtime only? Are they looking at the whole match?
Mm.
And if they're looking at the whole match, I think there's a problem with that, because in the first 5 minutes,
it should have been decided, right? Yeah.
Well, in the first 5 minutes, they're promoting you to go for broke because there's no points. And so you're going to make mistakes if you're not worried about points. And,
exactly.
And then you don't want that to come back and haunt you on a decision, you know? And that's what I feel like might have happened in that match with Jackson, because I definitely controlled the overtime. But in the first half of regulation, he would have maybe scored if there would have been points, but there was no points. And I was like kind of taking risks and just doing whatever. But, you know, it is what it is. In the end of it, I still like – It was good. Like, man, Pena won the absolute, and I had a 0-0 match with him. You know,
exactly.
It was even, and most people thought I won. And so it was like, even though I didn't win, when I finally got over that little bit of sadness, and it was like, let me look at the positive. The positive is I'm still fighting the best guys in the world to even matches. And so even though I haven't been focused on jiu-jitsu and I've been fighting, and, you know, Pena's one of the best of the new generation, you know, I'm still there. And so, for me, you know, and Shanji inspired me so much. His performance was incredible. And Shanji's 2 years older than me. And so I think at the end of it, we both felt super positive and super happy. And we're like, you know what, we got more left inside. Let's come back 2 years and do it again. When we thought that might've been our last one, we decided that we're going to come back and do it again. So, now it's going to be in the US, in LA, right in his backyard. And so maybe, you know, the positive, that self-talk and just never stopping and keep pushing is telling me that maybe that's our destiny to do it in the US. So that's what we're going to do.
Hell yeah. I mean, at the end of the day as well, you know, you get to showcase beautiful jiu-jitsu and demonstrate your skill set. What's even funny is I think Zhanji brought back the armbar from Close Guard. It's strange to see things come full circle like that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So what do you think were the key takeaways from this ADCC in highlighting where jiu-jitsu is at and the state of its evolution? You know, like you saw guys like Gordon Ryan come in with a really complete leg lock game and devastate everyone in their division. So what do you take away from this, and has it inspired you to, you know, look at new angles in your jiu-jitsu journey?
Oh, of course. I get inspired all the time. You know, like I said, I'm a student of the game. I love to watch. I mean, if I'm not at the competition in person, I'm definitely catching up on what went down, you know, watching video you know, obviously I'm looking at things a little differently now because my main focus is MMA. And so I'm a lot more into like wrestling and Muay Thai, boxing and stand up these days. But I still study jiu-jitsu, and I try to develop things that I can apply in the cage. You know, developing new things, that's helped me understand my jiu-jitsu even more, is how can I do what I like to do, you know, in a fight. How do I transition all of my jiu-jitsu into MMA? And it's made my jiu-jitsu better, even though I'm not doing it for a certain tournament, you know, or rules format. You know, I'm doing it for a fight. You know, in the end, going back, I mean, like you just said, you can see aspects of my jiu-jitsu that had been affected by my MMA experience.
Yeah.
And it's been in a positive way. And so, you know, but yeah, 100%, like, you know, there's a lot of things that Gordon does that I think is really good. I'm actually a big fan of his passing, and I think that's what he surprised most people with, was his top game.
That hip switch pass he does is beautiful. I love it. Where he rides the hook, puts his weight on it. And that's something I see, like with your smash passing, that's really attractive to me. Yeah, shotgun.
Shotgun pass. Yeah, that's on my pressure passing 2.0 that I had a few years back. But you know, so I'm constantly inspired. There's guys that, you know, you name it, I probably know more about their game than what they do sometimes. Like, I can look back, you know, Shanji calls me like an analyst, like a jiu-jitsu. I'm a huge jiu-jitsu nerd. Like, yeah. Anytime he's like, I can reminisce on Shanji's career and know who he fought, how he won, you know, what year, which tournament. Like, I can do it better than what he can, you know. I have a really good memory. I'm always watching. So, I thought this year's ADCC was one of the best, ever. So
fantastic.
I learned a lot.
Excellent. One thing as well, sort of in closing, I picked up from your MMA, often when I'm seeing guys flying the flag of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and they enter the fray of MMA, you know, you often see this sort of slow transition from, you know, a pure jiu-jitsuist, and, you know, occasionally they pick up a few good strikes, but I guess in your case, what's really surprised me is, you know, you've had some pretty cool knockouts, and, you know, you're throwing some really looks like very effective high kicks and punching combinations. So I feel like you're not lagging behind as much as some of the other jiu-jitsu guys that have entered jiu-jitsu, entered MMA, and looking to simply apply jiu-jitsu. As you've said, you know, you're encompassing and embodying a more holistic martial arts approach.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing my best. You know, I'm thankful I have some of the most amazing teachers, you know, in all aspects, from my jiu-jitsu teachers to my Muay Thai teachers. My Muay Thai teachers are Mauricio Veo and Andre Dita of Evolucion Thai. They are first generation black belts under Rafael Cordero.
Yep.
from the shoebox lineage. And, you know, they have such an amazing system, just like the Hibeto brothers. You know, Hibeto Jiu-Jitsu is an amazing system, and I feel like I'm just a product of my teachers, and just trying to do, you know, represent them to the best. And I feel like the combination of Hibeto Jiu-Jitsu and Evolucion Thai is just such a dangerous, lethal combination, and I'm so proud to represent it, and I believe in it so much. I believe in my abilities. I believe that my Jiu-Jitsu was made to be tested in any format. You know, it's perfect for anything, for gi, for no gi, time limit, no time limit, points, no points, or MMA, as real as it comes, you know. and the Muay Thai that I'm learning is Muay Thai designed for MMA. Yeah. It's not, you know, traditional Muay Thai that you learn and then you have to kind of adjust. Yeah. It's not like that at all. It's 100% designed for MMA. And, you know, I can do so much, because I have a great body type. And with the threat that I give people on the ground, it allows me to open up on the feet, and I don't have to really worry about getting taken down. And, you know, they have to respect my ground, and at some point they're going to understand that they're going to have to respect my stand up. And then it makes me a really difficult matchup for a lot of people. So, you know, I feel like two things usually happen to a specialist, like take a jiu-jitsu specialist. They either forget about jiu-jitsu and just train all stand up, and then they go in there and start doing way too much more stand up than what they need to. Or it's the other way, and they just only want to put the person down, and they don't ever develop enough stand up to make it easier to put the person down. And so, you know, all I'm trying to do is be a complete martial artist, a complete threat. The second that you're concerned about my stand up, I'm going to take you down. Mm. The second you're too concerned about me taking you down, I'm going to punch you or kick you in the face, you know? And the more that you can threaten, give multiple threats, the more you can find an easier path to victory. And so I'm, you know, I'm so thankful for my teachers and being able to learn from who I feel are the some of the best martial artists in the world. And I'm just putting it all together, man. I'm having fun.
Excellent. I agree. 2018 is looks shaping up to be, I think, quite an incredible year for you. So in closing, Rafael, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. Really appreciate the insight. You're a true martial artist. Is there anything else you wanted to impart to our audience before we go?
Thank you guys for the opportunity to be on the show. To all the fans out there, thank you for listening, and please check me out on my social media. You know, everything's pretty easy to find. Lovato, LOVATOJRBJJ. You can put that in Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook.com/LovatoJrBJJ. You can find all my pages. I like to connect to my fans, and I appreciate all the love and support. 2018 is going to be a big year, and so I'm just thankful to have everyone behind me, and then let's go on the ride together. Other than that, I just shout out to my sponsors real quick. Yep. War Tribe Gear and Onnit. They have some great products. Check those guys out. And thank you guys for the show one more time.
Fantastic. Amazing, Rafael. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Okay, take care.